Hey, Joe.
Hey, Madison.
Guess what I did over the weekend?
What'd you do?
I binge watched Only Murders in the Building.
Did you love it?
I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
I enjoyed it for different reasons than I thought I would.
Okay, why did you think that you would like it?
I thought I would like it because of, like, the set pieces, you know, the funky wallpaper.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought I was going to really enjoy it because, like, it was going to be about people doing a podcast.
Oh, yeah.
But it definitely focuses a lot less on that and more on the character interactions, like, in between all of these people and their relationships. And also, it kind of, I like it for the same reasons I like Mindhunter. It toys with the people who are true crime lovers because it holds up a mirror to you and it says, do you like what you see? And more than often, you don't.
See, I'm not a true crime lover, so I didn't have that. Like, that's not what drew me into it. So,
not gonna lie, I was a little concerned when I was like, Selena Gomez with
Steve Martin
and
Martin Short.
Martin Short. Yeah, I was like, I don't know how this is gonna go, but she holds her own.
And she's very dry, and it was perfect for her character.
Yes,
I just think it's fascinating.
Yes, it's interesting. It's definitely more. I guess it's more in the vibe of, like, it's very much fiction, where I was kind of thought it was going to be a little bit more quirky, leaning into the, like, making of a podcast. Maybe slightly more lighthearted, not as, like, drama as it was. But I do like a good drama, so I still enjoyed it.
I'm glad that you watched it.
Yeah, it was good. I watched it while I was working on a skirt.
Ooh, it's some of the episodes are hard to watch while you're doing something else.
Which I enjoyed that, too. Mm-hmm. So I did take time to, like, do that.
All right. Well, enough about that.
Yeah.
This is Be Createful, a podcast about finding fullness through creativity. I'm Joe.
And I'm Madison. And today on episode 77, we're talking about the self-evident truth of creativity. It's because it's coming out on July 4th, and I thought it would be a good idea to discuss the creative action of creating a nation and creativity.
Yes. I think it'll be interesting. Is that what you said?
Yeah. It's not a lens through which we look at our own nation's history.
No, we don't look at it through a creative lens.
And before we get any further...
Yes.
Joe and I are not historians.
Right.
I have done some research. I have not done extensive research. So if you have questions or if you're curious about some of the things that Joe and I say in this podcast, feel free to do your own research. Do not take our word as law because we might get things wrong.
Yes. So. You know, I think most Americans are disconnected from the history of our Constitution, Declaration of Independence, all of that. We don't know how it works. Like, we just... I know when I studied it, I probably had American history in junior high, and then I probably had a government class in high school, but it doesn't sink in, or you don't, like, you're not looking at it. You're almost learning the theory or the history in a vacuum, not overlaid with current events. And so... what I am noticing through the current events, I mean, recently we've had some very big constitutional things, right?
Yes.
Whether it's gun laws or abortion rights, all kinds of things. I'm realizing I don't really know how stuff works, and most people don't.
Yes.
When you're demanding certain things or calling for certain things, like, wait, that's not how it actually works.
Yeah. So. Well, and... I took the time to read through the Declaration of Independence today, which is really short. So if you want to go and read through it, because it was interesting to see all of the, because it's after what you would typically hear as the Declaration of Independence is a list of grievances. And so it's interesting to see those and compare that to the grievances that we have with our country today. And it's just interesting to see that, you know, the making of a country is not done when you have a constitution or when you have, you know, a bill of rights. Like, it's not, it never is completely finished because we always have new generations of people coming in and adding and collaborating with it.
Yes. I want to make a similarity, but I also am cautious in how I do this because I don't want to make them sound like they're the same thing.
Yeah.
I think that faith is similar because you have the Bible, and I'm being careful because I have seen some comments elevating the Constitution to the Bible,
a
basically.
Religious
well, that like peace. God, just like God.
Oh, like it's inspired word.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And I think that is an extreme view.
Yeah,
that I do not hold. But the similarity is the fact that it's something written in a specific time.
Yes,
but that is has some universal truth and universal application. Obviously,
yeah.
But you have to still hold the actual words within their history, and you have to be able to do both of those things. And if not, then that's where we kind of get all jumbled up.
Well, I mean, in the most famous phrase from the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. It's the word man, mm-hmm. men, that is used in that sentence. Mm-hmm. But we take that idea and expand it to mean humankind, that we believe that all people are created equal.
And that's what we believe now, but that's not what they believed. They meant men.
Well, here's the thing. While I was doing some research, they said that there was discussion about saying Englishmen in putting that into the Declaration of Independence, meaning specifically white men. But there was argument between those who were writing the Declaration of Independence that actually it should say men because they wanted to actually expand that view. And it wouldn't surprise me that there was argument back then about who do we include in, you know, all men are created equal.
And so their expanding was to say, okay, maybe it's more than English men. Maybe it yeah. could also mean Irish men and German men and French men.
Yeah.
And that expanding our perspective comes incrementally. Like you can't jump from English men to all men and all women. Like that's too big of a, would have potentially been too big of a leap for them. And you have to like take those small incremental
well,
steps.
Well, it didn't, I'm assuming now we're putting words into yeah. the mouths of the, yeah. of the founding fathers, but perhaps it didn't even cross their minds to even consider women to be part of that. I mean, women didn't get the right to vote until the 1920s. Women couldn't have their own credit card without a male signature until 1974. Like, change
you
happens.
You couldn't buy a house.
Yeah. Like, change happens incrementally.
Right.
But we still look back at that Declaration of Independence and take inspiration from it. I mean, I was reading through quotes of people who are commenting on the Declaration of Independence and saying that that particular sentence on human rights has been extremely influential throughout the world. Like, Abraham Lincoln used it and repeated it in his Gettysburg Address.
Because he was expanding rights, right?
Exactly.
Like he was using it as a way to say, no, this is what we said. And now we're talking about black men.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he, even though he came many years later, he was again a collaborator in making this country into the thing that it is today. Several different nations, many different nations have used our Declaration of Independence as a model for declarations of their own. Places, all sorts of countries in Europe and Latin America, New Zealand, Liberia, all of these places have used our declaration as a model for creating their own.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, like our declaration has created even more just by its own existence, which I think that's really interesting mm-hmm. and cool.
Okay, tell us all your history.
Okay.
I full disclosure, I did no history research.
I'll just share a little bit more because yeah. I don't want to bore y'all. But Thomas Jefferson was one of the main writers of the Declaration of Independence. There was also a committee of five people that assisted him, but it was mainly him. And he was inspired by someone else.
Okay.
So it wasn't just his ideas. One of the thinkers or philosophers that inspired him was John Locke. And so if you know anything about him, what you'll know is he believed in tabula rasa, that the human person is born like a blank slate and it's that nurture that they take in everything and they become that which they have been surrounded by.
Okay.
But they actually took, or Thomas Jefferson actually took some of John Locke's work and wrote it verbatim in the Declaration of Independence.
Did he cite John Locke? Or was it plagiarism?
You know, down there at the bottom, there wasn't a lot of room left with all those signatures. Yeah. So John Locke's creative work, his mental experiments and his philosophy had an inspiration that, gave inspiration to the Declaration of Independence, which then gave further inspiration to other declarations. And it's just this like continual collaboration of thought on what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to have a self that is different, separate from other people? What does it mean to, what kinds of things do human beings require to live a full life? Mm. And all of this is then like passed down and defined and redefined by various people. And it's just so interesting to me that people who were dead and gone by the time the Declaration of Independence came about were inspiring that, working on those ideas of human rights. And then we've got Abraham Lincoln, who's then taking that further. And then people after him that are, again, taking it further and stretching and pulling and adding to what it means to have... to be endowed by your creator with certain unalienable rights. What are those rights? You know, and it lists them. And what do those rights specifically mean? And it's just very interesting to watch how humanity interprets that and unfolds it. So that's the end of my history. So enjoy some of that.
Well, I think that it goes back to what we were saying earlier, that it builds, right? So any line of thinking is... building on the words of someone else, the thoughts of someone else. And then you're taking it into either bringing it into a current context or you're adding new information that we didn't have before.
Yep.
And you're building on those ideas and like fleshing them out mm-hmm. even more, expanding them, getting rid of some things yeah. like a black person is not 3/5 of a person.
Yes.
They're a whole person. Like, you know, we see the struggle, and I know that goes beyond the Declaration of Independence. That's moving into the Constitution, but it's all the beginning, all the founding yeah. of America.
Exactly. I mean, the 4th of July, we're not just celebrating our independence, but celebrating our country. It's like our patriotic holiday. Mm. And so we're thinking about all of these things. What does it mean for our country? Like, what is the identity of our country? What is the history? And what are we doing moving forward? It's like a birthday where you're like, what was I doing 5 years ago? What am I planning to do 5 years in the future? What am I doing now? It's that interesting, like, reflection time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a good time to look back at our history and consider how innovative and different these men were being at the time, because there was not a country like the United States before them. It was based on principles and ideas of like Western philosophy, like in ancient Rome, but they didn't have a country like we did.
Well, no, because there's no monarchy, right? Like yes. the whole idea that everyone has something to offer.
Yes. That has a say.
Was quite new.
Yes. And as a side note, the reason that I think public education is so important is because I do believe that everyone has something to offer, and we owe it to our next generation to educate them to then become voters and thinkers that then have something further to offer our country,
mm-hmm.
that they can be part of the collaboration of building our country into whatever they need it to be.
You know, sometimes I think we look at it too big, like... we talk about our country this and our country that, and we lose our community in that sense, because if I'm always looking at the bigger thing, it's losing the forest for the trees, I guess.
So what I'm getting here is like a lot of people focus on things at a federal level, like the, you know, that sort of thing. And we lose sight of the changes that we can make here at like the more local.
Yes. Level. So whether you're frustrated with something or celebrating something, if you're not acutely aware of the impact that laws, not even federal laws, state laws are having on your own community, then what's the point? Like, anyway, so I think sometimes we can sit in this narrative of how great and unique and different and wonderful the Declaration was and the Constitution was, and therefore America is. Mm-hmm. And we get stuck in that, and anything that speaks against that, out of like actually looking at the lived experiences of other people in our community.
Well, I mean, if you look back at the early start of our country, we didn't start out with the Constitution. We had the Articles of Confederation, mm-hmm. which didn't work out. So we had to change them. Our country doesn't stay the same. It has to change in order to move forward and to just be able to sustain itself in the world that it lives in. So if we hold on to, well, this is what we've been doing for the past 5 years, so we have to do it this way. If it no longer works, we should get rid of it. Like, that's kind of the point. That's why the Declaration was so interesting, was like, this king ain't working for us. We've tried this whole thing. We've tried working it out with you, and it's not working. So we're peacing out. So if we don't, so the founding fathers, at least from what I gather, is they tried to set up a system where you could change things, which is why we have a Bill of Rights, so that we can amend the Constitution. And they allowed for things like that because they knew that change is required.
I do think it was great foresight on their part, the way like to implement the way that we can amend things, the way, you know, the checks and balances, but then now we're how many years later, 200 and whatever. And, some things haven't changed like they should have, even though we have got, America has changed extensively.
Oh yeah.
Like from 13 colonies to 50 states. It just, I don't know, like,
and all the various territories. Yes,
as much as they kind of valued change and discourse, I feel like sometimes we have lost that. And the we don't want to change. We keep like trying to hold on to the history of the document. People may hear me saying things I'm not trying to say. What I'm trying to say is what gave the document life was the thinking of the people that wrote it, right?
Yes.
And like the attitudes that they had when they wrote it. And to me, that is what is so admirable. And that is what I think we don't want to change, is like that we're still being what you're talking about, collaborative and creative in the way that we look at our society.
If we are so strict to certain rules, it impedes us from being able to think outside the box and be creative with our solutions, which is what we're trying to do.
Right.
I don't think anyone truly wishes harm. Like anyone who lives here, I don't think they truly wish harm to do harm to our country. But I think we demonize other people because we think, oh, well, that's just going to ruin our country. I think they have the intentions of making it better. So if we approached each other from a sense of like, okay, we're all trying to make this better. We have the best of intentions at heart. All right, now let's see if we can try and collaborate.
Yes, I think that feeds into kind of when I was thinking about this episode, the thoughts that I had prepared is how does looking at the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the origins of our country, how does looking at that through a creative lens versus a political or a historical lens, how is that helpful?
Yes.
So I have a few things.
All right. Hit me with them.
So first of all, creativity shows us that there's no right way. Like, there are multiple ways to achieve the same creative endeavor.
Let me tell you, Joe, I've been trying to find, quote, the right way to live my life, and it has stressed me out. Like, people keep telling me, Madison, there's no, quote, right or best choice for you to make. You just have to figure out what works for you. And that's so nebulous and difficult to grapple with. And so then to say that, like, on a bigger scale, that, like, our cities or our country has to, like, that there's not a right way to do that. Frick.
But that's still what we're always still trying to be the ones that have the right way or the right answer.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I lived in Ireland for 3 years, and it is a democracy. It's different than ours, but they vote. They have, I mean, their government is all, I don't know the, how the government works in Ireland. Yeah. But what I do know is that, life doesn't look much different than it does here. And some things are a lot better. Healthcare. Some things are frustrating. Like, you know, there's gonna be good and bad things everywhere. Mm-hmm. But it just living outside of America helped me see that while yes, America has done amazing things, they created basically an experiment on if a nation could exist in a certain way.
Yeah.
And then other people have riffed on that, and the way that they riffed on it is just as valid. Mm-hmm. So that is the first thing that, looking at our society through a creative lens, a lens of creativity has, is helpful.
Yeah.
Is that it reminds you that there's no right way. So when we're having these conversations, what do we need to be proving that our way is the right way?
Well, like that's how the United States got put together, right? Was the people who were putting together our country thought, oh, we like this from over here, from ancient Rome. But we also like that Parliament is a thing over in England. So we're going to bring that over too. Mm-hmm. And they brought all of these pieces together. And so they riffed. I mean, it wasn't like there, like some of these components that make, that made up our country at the beginning were not solely like their own, like there's nothing new under the sun, right?
Right.
So they riffed and then people riffed on us. So it's like, of course there's not going to be a right way to do it because people are going to take the best, what they consider the best pieces and put them together.
Well, and sometimes when you're trying to get everyone on board, you have to you have to make some big compromises.
Yes.
Like the Electoral College was a big compromise to get the Southern states on board to ratify the Constitution. So like that kind of leads into the another thing is that you through creativity you learn how to value and appreciate different perspectives. So like someone could have an art style that I don't that's not my style, but I can still appreciate and value the artistic contribution that they are making. I can still value the time that they're putting into it. I can value, their expertise, their raw creativity, like all of those things.
And you could even potentially draw inspiration from the things that they do, but incorporate it in your own style.
Right.
But you wouldn't have that inspiration if you didn't take the time to listen, observe, and watch someone else who has a very different way of creating than you do.
Right. And their way of creating does not discount, disregard, devalue my way of creating.
Yes.
Like we're not ranking which type of art is the best or which whatever fill in the blank holds the most value. And so it actually elevates everything when we can see that people can approach a problem from different, they're approaching it from different sides and they're bringing in different strengths to help tackle the problem. And so that's another thing that I learned through the creative process.
I think there's sometimes, even when we're collaborating, like when you and I are collaborating, where I may see something like, that's probably not what I would have chosen. And you feel the same way. But when we finish the product, we think, oh, but this is better than I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. Like if I had designed it on my own.
And if I design it on my own, I'm going to like it, but am I the only one that matters?
Exactly.
It depends on what it is. Yeah. If I'm making a quilt for my house
Yeah, you need to be the one.
I'm going to use as much blue as I want.
There,
like,
you go.
I don't care if you like it.
Yeah.
But if we're making a mural for the bathroom that we share in this studio, it does matter if you like it.
Exactly. If anyone's ever had to decorate with roommates or spouses or whatever, you know, you would have a certain way that you would make up your house, mm-hmm. and your spouse has a totally, or the person you live with, I should say, mm-hmm. has a totally different idea. Mm-hmm. Or even if you got kids, what they want to put on the walls is going to be real different than what you want to put on the
wall. I mean, even from day to day, I have a different idea of what I want to do.
You might be a special case with your house DIY addiction.
Do you have any of these? Am I just jumping in on, I'm just rattling mine off.
No, I'm really enjoying listening to what you have to say about this. And then I wanted to talk just a little bit about collaboration as a whole a little bit later.
Okay. Yeah. The creative process has, we actually talked about this in our episode on becoming intermediate, like when you're not a beginner anymore. But one thing that I have found great value through the creative process is being able to acknowledge mistakes and course correct. So when creativity, because it's so fluid, I guess, or so, I think we don't see it like logic, right? And in mm-hmm. logic, we see that there's a right or a wrong or whatever. But in creativity, it lets us emphasize the process mm-hmm. in a way that we know we're not going to get it all right and we're going to make mistakes, but not making a mistake isn't the point.
Yes.
The point is that when we make a mistake, we can address it and change it and keep moving through the process. And so I think we do great disservice to the creativity of the founding fathers if we say, no, they had to get it all right
the first time
right
around.
Like, we're not, what they said was, whether you want to go as far as to say that it was inspired or whatever, we still have them kind of on this historical pedestal, and it can be difficult to acknowledge the mistakes that they made in this document that's really important to us. But when you can take the political and the historical conversation out of it and look at it strictly through a creative lens, nothing is perfect. Mm-hmm. And so creativity lets you build on the imperfection and turn it into something more beautiful, more suitable, more inclusive, more whatever word you want to use.
Yeah. I think our country is this like canvas or mosaic that we're constantly like layering and adding more and more to. It's never going to be done. So if we leave room for ourselves to make mistakes and say, okay, this is what we think is best right now,
mm-hmm.
other people may come in and change that. And you kind of have to be okay with that. Mm-hmm. And you can't take too much ownership about something that you're collaborating on. Because if you say, well, this was mine and you can't do anything mm-hmm. to change it, it's not fair to the other collaborators. Like, sometimes your piece needs to change in order to fit with the greater whole.
Right.
And that's really difficult to do.
That is perfect, though, because it leads into my next thing, which is the beauty of the whole. Mm. So let's talk about specifically quilting. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this mural that I was just painting. Mm. And because it's big, y'all. But when I'm painting, I'm like zoomed in on one part of the wall, right? And so it's really easy for me to see, oh, I don't like how. So it's a ribbon that twists and turns and changes colors. And so I might be like, ooh, I don't like how this one part of the ribbon is turning and meeting this new color. This doesn't look right. And mm-hmm. I can obsess over that one part. But then when I get off the scaffolding and step back and look at the whole thing, it isn't about that one part and the transition of that one part or those only two colors when it changes colors 100 times, right? Mm-hmm. And so can we do the same thing with our society?
So,
I know it's not easy for us. Especially because our culture values the individual, versus the whole.
Which, if you want to know why, it's because John Locke was very much focused on the individualist, and he influenced a lot of people, Thomas Jefferson among them.
Yeah. So even in the Declaration of Independence, like, that every man is created equal and every man has these inalienable rights. But what about the community? Mm-hmm. Like, the idea of community isn't really there, mm-hmm. is it?
So when I read through it, it was the main body of it is mostly grievances. So, I mean, it doesn't say a lot necessarily about that. Now, I didn't have the chance to go and read through the Constitution again recently.
Yeah.
That could speak to it a little bit more, but I would agree that in general, our country is more focused on the individual than the community.
And when we clash is when individual rights are bumping up against someone else's individual rights, right?
Yes.
And so we're not great at looking at the community at large. But I think that the creative process helps with that.
Well, especially when you realize it's so collaborative, you do have to take into account everyone else mm-hmm. that is building it with you.
And that there's, so my point was that there's beauty in the whole. Like a quilt is more beautiful when you zoom back and you're seeing all the pieces and how they come together. Or like, you know, the tapestries that they would, are hanging on the castle walls and stuff.
If it was all one color, all one fabric, it's no longer a tapestry and it's no longer a quilt.
Or if you're seeing it zoomed in and looking at one spot, like, you're never getting the whole picture.
Exactly.
And then my final way that looking through a creative lens is helpful is that it just is a reminder. Creativity is an evolving process. I already alluded to this, and it's always about the process, not so much the product. We talk about that all the time. And so I think that's a helpful mindset to have when we're looking at the present and the future of our country in relationship to the past.
Because we're not going to get it done. We're not going to get it like set like, oh, good, we can all go home. All legislators can go home. We made the perfect country.
Right. Also, that'll never they happen. Didn't get it done.
Yeah.
And they weren't saying, they were under no illusion that they were getting it done.
Yeah.
That's why they gave us, like you said, the ability to make changes.
Yes.
And I learned this from Sharon Sesso on Instagram, but she says frequently that the framers never intended for the Constitution to necessarily be used the way that we have used it. Like that they... It seems like in other writings that they were anticipating that the Constitution would be actually revisited mm-hmm. every so often, like incrementally, that we would be looking at the Constitution as a whole and making changes. And we don't.
Yeah, not as often.
No.
I always think about that when I go to like some sort of, like when I go to like a board meeting or something like that, because they have like, certain groups have constitutions, and those get changed all the time. I was actually in the process of writing bylaws for a group, which was really interesting. And of course, I had no idea how to do that. So I had to go and look up someone else's, which I then changed, which I then brought to other people, and they had ideas about it. And I was real upset because I had to go back and rewrite like so much. And it took forever.
You were not valuing the different perspectives.
I was not. I will admit that. I was just like, come on, people. Because really...
They weren't valuing your time.
What was frustrating me, they weren't valuing my time. And I kept telling them, these can always be changed
right.
and revisited.
Right.
Which is the idea. When the rules no longer suit the group, it's not the group that's the problem. It's the rules. So change the rules.
Yeah.
Like, it's as simple as that. Your body is not the problem. Okay. It's the clothes you're wearing. Change the clothes you're wearing.
Right.
Like, sometimes we get like all backwards and all of that. So just, if it's not working, change it.
Right. Well, we're not comfortable with that, Madison.
I know. Change is scary. Mm-hmm. And when you've been used to doing something for so long, you know what happens. You know what outcome you get, even if it's a bad one.
Right.
Like when I was at the beginning, when we were talking about true crime, I think a lot of people listen to that because they know something bad is going to happen. But they know it's going to happen. And that's what's comforting to them is that they know what's going to happen.
Versus the surprise.
Exactly. I think people really struggle with that whole not knowing what's going to happen. And that's what's truly scary about doing a...
Hang on, we're having to manage Pip. Okay. That's what's scary about.
Yeah, that's what's scary about creating a new country. Mm-hmm. I mean, the founding fathers were scared in their writings. They talked about, we don't know if we're doing the right thing or how this is going to work. This may all fall flat. Thankfully, it didn't. And I get to live in this country and enjoy some of the things that are here. But they didn't know.
No. Well, and it could have fallen flat. Also, it still could.
Yeah, we're not guaranteed anything, right?
No. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately because of the hearings that have been coming out about January 6th.
Oh, yeah.
And watching some of those and just hearing people, you know, very conservative people who wanted Trump to be elected and saying, though, that how close we were to losing our Constitution that day, a complete upheaval of everything that we know if they had been successful.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's an argument because they would point back to the Declaration of Independence that they would say that they were trying to throw off tyranny. So they have a different perspective.
Right. That's what the people storming the castle would say. But these people in the hearings are saying if you actually lean on our Constitution and the way our Constitution was set up, mm-hmm. Pence couldn't overthrow the election like Trump wanted him to. That there are safeguards in our Constitution to keep fraud and tyranny, on opposite spectrums from happening. Mm-hmm. And that if the insurrection had been successful, what that would have meant for our Constitution.
Yeah.
And it would have thrown it all out the window. So that it isn't, and these are people saying this wasn't the outcome in the election that I wanted, but I am loyal to the Constitution, not to one person. Mm-hmm. And that can happen. I'm not trying to be partisan. That can happen on either side of the political aisle, that you start to see this one person that embodies everything that you want the country to look like. Mm-hmm. And so it's so easy to say, well, whatever means necessary for this to happen, because you've taken everything that maybe should be put on the Constitution and you're putting it on to that one person. Yeah. But that's a little bit of a tangent.
Yeah.
But what made me think of that, though, was just I've been starting to think about how delicate...
Oh, yes. Of
how delicate society actually is, and how at any time...
I'll read any dystopia book, right?
Right.
I don't want to give anyone worries or anything, but the way the social contracts that we have with each other are very tenuous.
Yes. And everything that is having to happen, and the compromises people are having to make to keep the whole thing floating.
Yeah. Because that's what it takes to live in a society, is there has to be a give and take. You know, I can't solely look out for myself if I want to be a part of a community and benefit from the community. Mm-hmm. It requires collaboration and some sacrifice and giving up things on my part.
And be part of a community where people are different than you.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm part of a community where people are very different than me. Mm-hmm. I mean, on the outside, we look the same. But, we don't think the same. So, how am I going to live here in community with other people if I can't do some of these things that we're talking about?
Yeah.
Speaking of.
Yeah.
Tips.
Let's talk about some things.
Okay.
Okay. Remember that collaboration takes time. So you're going to have patience. There probably will be some arguing, and there's probably going to be some things that go on that just you think takes too long. I had to deal with that when I was writing bylaws, but on a grander scale, if you're talking about touchier subjects than just how are we going to run a meeting?
Right.
It's going to take a whole lot longer. So,
and we alluded to designing your home.
Yes.
But what color are we going to paint the walls is still a lot different of a conversation than some that we're having to have right now in our society.
Yeah, exactly. So patience. Have patience. Mm-hmm. What about you? What do you have?
My first tip would be to seek out other voices and perspectives. Mm-hmm. And that means specifically voices that are not like yours or saying what you want to say. That means if you are a man, you need to be seeking out the voices of other women, and not just the voices of women that are supporting what you already believe. Mm-hmm. But voices of women who are saying something different than you. It means if you're white, you're seeking out the voices of Black and brown people in America, and you're listening to the experiences that they have, because there's no way that I can understand what being Black is like.
Nope.
And I can't listen to a white person tell me what it's like to be Black. Like, I have to listen to Black and brown and other people of color to hear what their experience is like. And like we were talking about before, about, you know, broadening perspectives, one person's art style does not negate mine. So like, one person's lived experience doesn't mean that my lived experience isn't true. What it means is my lived experience is not complete. Mm-hmm. It's not the whole picture, and it's not the only one. And, but you'll never get that if you're only listening to voices that look like yours, or to voices that may be different but are saying the same thing.
Yes. I would add on to that, and here's my next one, is get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Because you will, if you are seeking out those different voices, you're going to be hearing some things that maybe butt up in contrast to your lived experience. Mm-hmm. And you're going to want to say things like, well, that's not the way it was for me.
Right.
And that is true. But is that helpful for the conversation? Mm-hmm. Is the question you have to ask yourself. I think growth happens the best in humans when we are uncomfortable. My kids, when they come into sewing class, they are not comfortable with the sewing machine.
Right.
But as they get comfortable, they realize that they are capable of trying out something new. Even if they don't end up staying and loving sewing, mm-hmm. they tried something new. Mm-hmm. I feel that way about new recipes, going new places. Y'all know how much I like trying new things. And it might be a little uncomfortable, but that's what's going to allow you to grow,
right?
And become a more whole person, in the sense that like you are broadening your horizons.
Mm-hmm. I think along with that, we have to be honest about the good old days or the way things were. Like, it's so easy to be like,
friends, there are no good old days. I hate to tell you this, but even the people living in the good old days were not having a good old time. Like, when people see me dress up like, oh, you're in the 50s. Oh, isn't that so nice? The good old days. It's like, everyone smoked. Like, the way that we picture see things through media of like what the 50s were like, it wasn't Grease all the time. It wasn't I Love Lucy all the time.
Well, even Grease,
I know,
isn't great.
It isn't great, but we glamorize
the past, and you forget the hardship, especially if it's stuff you didn't live through. I heard someone say that, you know, the question, like, if you could go back in time, mm-hmm. where would you go? Only white men are like, I'd go anytime. But like, nobody else, like, I don't want to go back in time. Like, there's no other time period I would want to live in if I could not bring some modernity with me.
Oh, yeah. Like, if I could... Like, when people ask me that question, I give my answer with the caveat of I would be like a force ghost watching what was happening and not having to interact. Like, I would love to see history unfold, but I do not want to be there as myself.
No, or even like, even if you went back in time, like if you love, you know, all of the like Bridgerton, like, and Pride and Prejudice, and that
era, whatever, the Regency that era. Yeah.
Well, unless you're rich, do you really want to go back to that time?
Yeah.
And then if you are rich, but you're still yourself and you're still seeing all the inequity that's happening in your society, like, and women, our book club is reading Emma right now by Jane Austen. And I just think like women just had to get married so that they could survive. Like it's a social contract that you're getting married, and you better have something to offer either in
a dowry or, yeah.
Or in the ability to keep your mouth shut and not have any ideas.
Yeah.
No, thanks. So be honest about the good old days. And it doesn't mean that you have to say
that they were all bad all the time.
Was horrible. Right. It's the balance of what you were saying of, yeah. It's uncomfortable to look back at how many of our founding fathers, the framers, had slaves.
Yes.
That the fact that they could own slaves influenced the way they're thinking as they wrote the Constitution and as the Declaration of Independence, as they're talking about every man created equal.
Yeah.
It was influenced by that. So if we can acknowledge it instead of whitewashing it, mm-hmm. getting rid of it, pretending like it didn't exist, then it means that we're starting from a more honest place.
And I would say to be careful of the opposite of that, of totally demonizing someone because of that.
Right.
You have to take what is useful and leave the rest. I love the aesthetic of the 1950s. I'm going to take that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave the lack of women's rights behind.
Right.
I'm going to take what I like and just let the rest go by. We have to do that with people. I think we talked about this when we've talked a little bit about cancel culture or like famous artists, like how do you interpret like death of the author, all of that. You have to realize that people aren't perfect and that they can still have good ideas while being imperfect people.
Well, and people who are living now always get a chance to change their mind and redeem themselves, right? Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about historical figures, they don't.
Yeah.
So you
they're also living in their own context.
Right. So you can't hold them accountable to how our society is now.
Yes.
But what you can do is look at the things that they were saying and filter it through a lens of culture and hold those ideas accountable. And the way that we glorify some of those ideas, we can hold those things accountable and our response to them.
Consider the source.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. My next one is that good collaboration takes good planning.
Mm.
And again, that goes back to good. It takes time to do that.
Uh-huh.
And it also takes people who know how to plan. So you have to be willing to hand over a job to someone who may know more than you. And relinquishing control is scary. And allowing and being willing to follow a plan that someone else has laid out may require you to step back and allow others to lead. So leave space for that. You're not, it's not all about you.
Well, and look at the work we do. And then we also have to execute. And while we're executing the plan, we're also having to readjust because some of it doesn't work out. Like, there has to be a level of flexibility that we are not very gracious with. COVID is a great example of when it first started and no one knew. We didn't know anything. And so the information we were getting at the beginning was changing. But people were they were using that information at the beginning as a way to say, see, they don't know what they're talking about. Well, yeah. Was the scientific process. It's a hypothesis. And then you test it and then you change.
Things change.
So you have to be I'm just going to piggyback on, it's not one I had, but like with your planning.
Yeah.
Then it's like the flexibility too, as it's being executed.
Exactly.
Well, I'll say going along with that is to let go of dead weight. So as you see the things that aren't working, that are no longer serving you, cut them loose.
It's really hard to do, though, if you really like said thing or have grown accustomed to said thing. It can be like a security blanket where you're like, it's always been there.
Yeah.
I need it.
But also, has it always been there? Has it always been there in the way that you think that it has been?
Mm-hmm.
So what if it's always been there? Is it actually still serving you anymore?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I like that one. It's simple and clean.
Yeah.
I think it's very self-explanatory. All right. Good communication. So I think you talked about seeking out voices.
Mm-hmm.
You need to actually listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of good communication, is listening to what someone else has to say, sitting with it, and then being able to respond to that in a way that continues communication.
I'm going to add that good communication, a good communicator doesn't mean someone who can write the quippiest tweet or like the most shareable meme.
Uh-huh.
That's not good communication because those things hold no space for nuance.
Yes.
And I honestly don't know if it's possible. I don't think everyone can be a good communicator on social media. I think that it is within our capacity to be good communicators every day in our society. And part of being a good communicator is committing to sit at the table long enough to actually have the conversation and not just get your talking points across.
Well, that's what I mean. I think that goes with what you're saying about social media. It requires two people to have a conversation. Sharing a meme or writing a quippy tweet is something that you do solely on your own, and then other people can either like it or not like it.
Or blasting someone in the comments with false equivalencies and things that they're not even talking about.
That's like, not a conversation.
Right. There's no rules to the flow of communication online.
Yes. So it requires you to be at the table long enough to have a good conversation with mm-hmm. someone.
And it, what you were talking about before, how it takes time, like your first mm-hmm. tip, good communication is awkward and fumbly. Like being able to win a debate does not make you a good communicator.
No, you're a good debater.
A good orator. You're good at putting your thoughts out, but does that actually mean that you are creatively connecting with someone else through your thoughts?
I think that brings up an excellent point that someone can have a really good idea, but not be a really good orator mm-hmm. or struggle to get their idea mm-hmm. out there. That doesn't mean that they don't have good ideas.
Mm-hmm. Or the words that they do end up using are so inflammatory that it actually doesn't describe the thing at all. I'm going to throw out an example. Defund the police.
Mm.
It does not actually describe what that movement is trying to do. They're talking about an allocation of resources.
Yes.
In a way that like the phrase that mm-hmm. is catchy, well, not catchy.
That's short the phrase that and gets easy shared to say. Yeah.
Doesn't explain what it actually is. And so then whoever hears, you could hear defund the police and think that they're just want to get rid of the police department. And while some extremes, that might be what they're trying to do, that's not what the actual process would entail. So, okay, my final one is to find the common thread. And I think mm-hmm. this actually goes into sitting at the table long enough to have the conversation, right? Because mm-hmm. I think that no matter which side politically you're on, there are things that we all have in common. Mm-hmm. There are things we all want. Less gun violence.
Yes.
The way we go about it is going to look quite different. Mm-hmm. The way that each side is going to, where the place that each side is going to start from looks quite different. But if you can follow your thread to find the other person, then you find where you have in common and you work out from that. And then that goes back to including all perspectives. Like it's never going to be, this is the way to solve that problem. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be a collaborative effort when it comes to problem solving.
Yeah. Have humility. Realize mm-hmm. that your idea may not be the best idea. I think that's just the simplest way to deal with collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, have enough confidence to say what you need to say, but also realize that it's not what you say is not always the best idea.
Mm-mm. And sometimes we really settle for ideas that aren't the best because it's an idea.
Yeah, we can get so lost in like, we just need a solution. Fine, we'll do this one. But again, that goes back to having patience.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take a while to get something that's workable. We're mm-hmm. not talking about perfect, just something that works.
Well, we have to quit thinking about it as like winners and losers.
Yeah.
I think we talked about that. We maybe talked about that in episode 7, which was our social tension
mm-hmm.
episode, which, gosh, I feel like we could revisit that every 3 months.
Yeah.
That when you have an us and them mentality or a winners and losers or a, even on with the overturning of Wade, Roe versus Wade, that feeling like a big win for one side and then the other side is losing. But actually, there's a lot of loss that's happening from that. Like, it's never cut and dry of winning and losing. And so we have to get rid of that language too.
Yeah. Because there's not, when I tell people in Dungeons and Dragons, if you can win or not,
yeah,
you can't. It's a collaborative game. You all work together towards one goal.
Dungeons and Dragons is a perfect example from my limited knowledge that you have shared with me. Yeah. But that is, you know, that is always the biggest concept for me of like, wait, you don't win?
Yeah. You win when the goal is completed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we need to be. So what I'm saying is we need to look at our country more like Dungeons and Dragons.
Are there like adversaries in Dungeons and Dragons?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
There can be all sorts of things. And there can be, I mean, what I love about it is that there can be nuance and things of like who really is the bad guy. There can be different factions. Like,
do you ever like have a campaign that's against another team?
Do
you see what I'm saying? Where it's like in the game.
In the game. You could, but those tend to be like one-offs that are like, oh, battle arena, fight to see who wins. But the story ends there. It can only end after one session. If you want to continue playing and writing a story with people, it requires collaboration and you cannot work against each other. Otherwise, your story ends too quickly.
Yeah.
So we want the story of our country to continue. So we need to work together. We can't be pitted against each other.
Yeah. Sharon says so always, says we can't work for each other's mutual destruction.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't.
Dungeons
we're not
and Dragons
a unicycle.
Don't work like that.
Yeah.
Our country doesn't work like that.
Right. But we don't see it as a, we're so, like every analogy we have is so much like us versus them, this team versus that team. One team wins, one team loses, competition and all of that instead of Dungeons and Dragons.
D&D is not one of the only ones. There's all sorts of board games out there that are collaborative. And I wish people would play those more because then they would have a better concept of, oh, we can have a good time solving problems and having this element of competition, but not just one of us wins.
Right.
We all can win.
Right.
Or we all lose.
Or it's not about the winning and losing at all. It's about having a good time or like spending time together, right?
Oh, wow. Shocker. I just wish people would realize that more.
Well, I don't realize it much as a competitive person. I have to remind myself of that.
That's fair.
What is your sour this week?
Wait,
did you have anything else to say?
No, I'm good with that. I'm just, guys, be more collaborative. Play some more Dungeons and Dragons. Learn from that. Anyways, I want to talk about my sweet first.
Oh.
So, you know, last week my sour was my car title. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to go and fix it. I called the title suspense place and they're like, oh, your new title is coming. We're mailing it out Monday. I was like,
perfect.
I don't have to do anything. They're like, nope, it's coming out Monday. And I was like, yes!
Yay.
I mean, how often do you get to call in to some bureaucrat and be like, I don't have to do anything?
Yes. You took care of this?
You took care of it?
How wonderful.
I'm so excited. So yeah, that's my sweet.
Okay. Yay. So does that mean I need to do my sweet now?
Yeah, I guess. Did you not have one?
I mean, I'm really liking the mural that I painted. Not all of it. There's parts I want to change, but, it's almost done.
Yes.
And it looks good. And other people are liking it. So I'm just holding that.
There you go.
With.
Hold that truth.
Yes.
People like it.
Yeah.
It's good.
What's your sour?
You know, I didn't actually think about my sour because I've been like so excited about my title.
Your title of Candy Master?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Did we talk about it last time?
Yeah,
on
we
the
did
podcast?
Because when Nancy came in this week, she said, what is your title? What do I call you now?
I am the Candy Master.
Candy Master.
I did not appreciate the kids. Like, I think some of them tried to like snot in my hair because they like can't. I told them that my hair, which has recently dyed, smells like grape soda. They came up and like smelled it, but I think they were trying to like put it
blow
in their
nose.
In it. So I guess that can be my sour. Kids getting way too close. And there's COVID going around. I don't need that.
Oh, yeah. You're like, get your COVID germs out of my grape soda.
I love the kiddos. I don't love the germs.
Mm-hmm. We had a lot of kids cancel last week.
Yes, because of COVID that's going around.
Like almost half a class.
Yeah. And I heard, I don't want to speculate, but anyways, COVID's going around. Wash your hands. Yeah. Do your best to, like, you know, just stay healthy.
Yeah.
What's your sour?
My sour is that, let me think of a nicer word. I messed up my shoulder.
Oh.
Well, my shoulder has been messed up for decades.
That sounds ominous.
Well, when you're almost 40.
Okay. Well, what caused it in the first place?
I think swimming.
Okay.
Like, I was a competitive swimmer. I did, my stroke was the butterfly, which is like not super nice on your shoulders. And I think probably because I swam so young, I don't know, but I didn't swim for like a long time, but my shoulder, I've had issues with my shoulder since I was in my late teens. Anyway, I've done like rounds of physical therapy. I've had MRIs, all that kind of stuff. I've seen an orthopedic surgeon a few years ago. But when I was painting a mural for like 50 hours or however long I was painting last week, it's gotten pretty unbearable. Ugh. So Madison is seeing me walk around with an ice pack made of water beads.
Poor gal.
And like, I don't know. It just makes me feel like I can't do anything. So I made an appointment. I made an appointment to go back to the orthopedic surgeon and see what they say. Okay. So
that's no fun, but I'm glad you're taking care of yourself.
Yeah. My sister had shoulder surgery a few years ago, and I was scrolling through her Instagram looking at like all of her shoulder posts.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know if I want to have surgery, but also, I mean, I've been dealing with it for so long.
Yeah.
And it's like, it gets in the way of me doing what I want to do. So anyway, again, I don't want to speculate.
Yeah.
I might go in and them say surgery, we can't help you. I don't know. Or they might say, you've tried other things. Let's give this a go. So we'll see. But
yeah,
it's my right arm. I think that is what freaks me out a little bit even more is that Jess, it was her left arm.
She's not left-handed.
No, she's right-handed. So it was her non-dominant arm.
Yes.
And then when I think about my dominant arm being like immobilized for however long, I don't know what that would mean.
Yep.
No quilting classes during that time, I guess. I guess
not.
So anyway.
Yeah. So this week I've been learning about some more home DIYs.
Ooh, what are you learning?
I want to learn how to put like those picture frame moldings like up on the wall. I've been thinking about it for a while and like, oh, you know, that'll be very simple to do. Well, I found a way of doing it where I may not like damage my walls as much, like nailing something in gluing something in. And I'm really excited about that because
do you want to put it?
I was thinking about putting it in my hallway.
Okay.
Because there's not a, like when you think of decor for a hallway, like it just feels such like a small space that to have like a picture or art, you would have to like stand back and be able to see it. But that molding adds like texture and a little bit of like, you know, like old home sort of like classy traditional stuff going on. Maybe a nice little chair rail in there or something, you know, just to add some like, oh, it's not just a hallway.
Yeah. Or board and batten, you could do like.
Yes. Exactly.
Chair row height and then the batten boards going down.
I was thinking about that too. All right. So that's what I'm learning.
I have been learning, well, I worked a lot last week.
Yeah.
So, and then I guess now I'm learning that I overdid it.
I was about to say, are you learning that you have limits?
Yeah, maybe that's what I'm learning.
And that's an okay to learn. Yeah. Sometimes you don't know you have a limit until you hit it.
Also, like, no, I knew. I mean, I pushed at least one day too far that I knew I shouldn't be doing this, but I just wanted to get it done. So that is where my, what were we just talking about the other day? Like, Oh, I said, I'm learning maybe I can't do something for 12 hours. And then I said, that's my whole personality.
Yes.
Wait, what? I have to do things in moderation?
Yeah.
I was teaching the itty bitties the word moderation at itty bitty playtime last Friday because we had, I put food coloring on one of our trays and then put baking soda on top of it and gave them vinegar to drop. And so it like bubbles up color. And so the first hour, kids basically just dumped vinegar out. It was a huge mess. And so the second hour is always smaller. There was maybe 8 kids there. So I gathered them all around and we like learned how to do it together. And I taught them the word moderation. That you have to put the vinegar on in moderation.
In moderation. So you need to paint this mural in moderation. Yep.
And I guess future endeavors.
Yeah, probably. Well,
but the weather has been nice. I will say I'm always complaining about how hot it is. And yesterday and today have been quite pleasant.
Yes.
So I just want to give the weather its fair due and acknowledge when things are good.
Okay.
Just like I am always complaining about when they're bad.
East good. Hooray.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Good, good. And Madison and I are wearing the same shirt. Well.
Yeah, we're wearing
different
the same
colors.
Yeah. But same shirt.
But same shirt. That our friend Katie gave to us. They say babes support babes.
And yes, we do.
Yep.
Babes should support other babes.
Yep. We do what we can. All right. Well, that will do it.
Yeah.
Happy 4th of July, however you're choosing to celebrate.
Yeah.
And
enjoy it.
Broaden your perspective.
Yeah. Maybe have a chat with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you to my dear, dear friend Craig Hudson for our very createful theme music. You can hear more of Craig's music on Spotify under Craig Hudson, that's Hudson with a T, or you can just click on the link in the show notes. Also, be sure to connect with Make Do on Instagram at Make Do Create or on Facebook at Make Do Cersei, and visit our website, makedocreate.org, for upcoming classes, show notes, to order a face mask, lots of things. We'll be back here with another episode next Monday. Have a good week, y'all.